Good morning and welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I'm Amy Otto, joined by Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Miss Amy. How is Swanee?
It's much further than I'd like to travel at 7 a.m., but you know, the sunrise is beautiful in the morning.
You're always looking on the positive.
Yes. All kinds of colors this morning. If you missed it, it was orange and yellow and purple. It was great. Love watching the sun come up. How about you? How are you doing?
I am awesome. Fired up. It's going to be a great show because we're talking about marketing. That's one of my favorite things.
Exactly. Only a few things excite you as much as Kenny Rogers.
And marketing.
Kenny Rogers and marketing. Doesn't get much better than that. We have two great guests today. First, we have Bernadette Peters, who started Natural Marketing Services 4 years ago with a vision to increase the number of small business success stories in the Southeast. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show, Bernadette.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with us. Where were you prior to starting this business?
I was with Paradigm Direct Marketing in Roswell. And we worked with a variety of larger businesses on a national scale of doing partnership marketing. And with changes in the marketplace, we decided to start a local business in Atlanta about 4 years ago.
What's partnership marketing?
Partnership marketing is putting together two companies where you leverage their assets, their soft assets other than cash, to give each other access to each other's database. And so you work across all functional marketing channels, but you actually leverage the assets that the other partner has.
So there are two separate businesses that you kind of bring together so that are complementary, that kind of so they're bigger than their individual parts?
Right, exactly.
And you say you work with small businesses. Define that, because I find it's different from person to person.
Definitely. The government would define it as much larger than what we work with. But we typically work with companies, 1 to 150 employees, but kind of, work around the 1 to 20 range.
So do the people create the programs, or do you go in and help implement a program and then execute? What's your involvement from start to finish?
We actually do both. We go in and we look at creating a strategy for that business to help them achieve their goals, and then we can implement most of the programs. Obviously, there's some things that we don't do that other companies do much better, like a full-blown PR program or branding strategy, but we work in the direct response arena of really attracting prospects and turning them into customers.
So start us with, from the very beginning of working with the client, what are some of the questions you ask them, their needs, and how do you move forward?
Well, one of the things that we do with most clients is we do a marketing strategy session. And we get together for 90 minutes, and we go over a list of questions that are specific to their industry. So we're looking at their business and their background, what their goals are, their financial statistics, because that's really important to get the big picture for marketing. The marketing infrastructure that they have and the campaigns that they've done, whether they've been successful or not. And then we look at the database and the data that they gather about their customers, their prospects, their partners, and even the campaigns that they do.
Do you find that there's some kind of common mistakes that small businesses make?
Yes, there's basically similar mistakes. I mean, the American Marketing Association will tell you that small businesses fail for three main reasons. One is lack of capital. Two is lack of sales. And three is lack of skills and knowledge to be able to run the business effectively. The lack of sales comes into play in marketing. And in those, functional marketing areas, those mistakes vary, but what we see quite a bit is that a small business owner doesn't take into account the database of customers that they have and database of prospects to target it intelligently and use that information to create a strategy that's going to be effective for them.
So, like, they're sitting on possible sales, but they just aren't kind of leveraging it?
Partly. That's a big factor that we've seen, too, is a lot of companies are great about filling their pipeline with prospects.
Right.
But once they get all those prospects, they're not converting them to customers.
Mm, right.
And we think that sales, going out and doing the pitch is all there is. But there's so much more to that.
And so you give them kind of a longer term view of a prospect, like ways to kind of tap them over time.
Exactly. We look at it from a multi-step conversion strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Long gone are the days of putting an ad out there and people responding to it right away. we're seeing and hearing 3,400 advertising messages every single day.
Right.
So it's absolutely amazing. We're not only competing with other chiropractors in the world or other retail stores, we're competing with Verizon and Coke and iPod and all of this minutia that we're being bombarded with.
So what are some of the ways that your clients tap their prospects over time?
Really what we encourage them to do is introduce themselves to a prospect in a low-risk type scenario and give them a call to action where they can engage in a relationship with them. For example, a coupon for a free trial, a subscription to a newsletter program, or some sort of taste of what the product or services that they have to offer. And that way you begin to build trust just like you would in a networking arrangement. And you can do that on a large scale for small businesses. They can use their ads and direct mail pieces to do that.
So maybe even a podcast.
Maybe even a podcast. Exactly.
So what are the five factors of effective advertising, do you think?
Well, when we look at each factor, we're looking at what we can do to maximize in each arena. So many folks will blame the media channel as a source of their failure, you know, the yellow pages, the newspaper ad, the radio program, when in actuality that's just only one portion of what they need to do to make their marketing effective. So if we look at the media channel itself, we want to look at how it reaches the target market. And before that, you even have to know who your target market is.
Mm-hmm.
So when you talk to these media channels, you can usually request a media kit. And in there, they'll have information about the target market, the demographic information, and how many impressions that that advertisement or program will have. So when we look at those impressions, we define them by how many printed pieces there are, email addresses, cars passing by, billboard, listeners to a radio show, that sort of thing. That's what we look at, is the impressions. And they have to be measurable. Not just predicted by circulation. You know, a lot of times a magazine might say, you know, we have X amount of circulation because the magazines sit in the doctor's office.
Right.
But actually, you need to really look at just what's printed in order to compare apples to apples when you're trying to figure out what to do.
And how do you define impressions? I mean, what does that mean to you, and how do you define it?
It's the number of times that the ad or the radio program will be seen or heard, or the commercial will be seen or heard. So that's how you can compare apples to apples. And different companies have different ways of measuring that.
So is the message the most important part of the marketing?
It can be. I would say about 50% the media channel and 50% the message. So when we're looking at the message, we want to make sure that it's tailored to the market focus, definitely. You know, you can't cast the wide net in general publications and general type advertising anymore. It's more important to focus on a particular target market, and it may be just for a period of time. For example, we worked with a therapy group. There were six therapists in the group. They were all psychologists. They didn't have psychiatrists to refer to them, so they needed to find a target market that they could focus on for at least a period of time. And when we did the strategy session, we determined that we needed to find people who had a large disposable income and who were willing to do the work on an emotional level. And one of the targets that we came up with was the gay male sector of the population.
Right.
Because that tended to fit all the criteria that they were talking about. Now, they don't focus on the target market all the time. They focus 4 months out of the year around the celebration of Gay Pride. So they'll do some advertisements in Southern Boys. They sponsor Gay Pride. They do newsletter articles based on alternative relationships. And they do that all to focus on that particular market, and it really helps them to bring in those types of patients.
And then when you're working with them, do you give them something that allows them to see the results based on that?
Yes, we encourage them in every program that they do to have some sort of tracking mechanism. So for their ads, for example, we'll either have them print a phone number that's a back line that they don't use very often, so we can track the calls to that line, or a particular URL where they can pick up a white paper or pick up a coupon or get some information that they want. And those things are more trackable. Obviously, a coupon is the most easy way to see if something's working, but we can use the URL and the phone number as well.
So what are some of the other ways that people get their message out? You're talking about mailers, websites, things along those lines. I mean, where does networking and other speaking engagements, where does that fall into someone's marketing plan?
Actually, they all fall in together. When we do the marketing strategy session, we look at every functional marketing area, even events that they host, events that they attend, networking involvement, their grassroots type marketing, because it all plays in together to make their business effective. And some companies may have more of a grassroots effort, like specialty physicians, for example. We look at getting referrals from internists and family practice physicians. So their marketing is very much grassroots. They do very little advertising. But others, like in the retail arena, they might need to do more direct mail and advertising and traditional.
Right. So it sounds like it's the media channel, the target market, the message, the frequency and duration, and then also just the campaign strategies and the message and how you're able to focus that.
Right. And the key is testing. So many small businesses get out there and they get in over their head because they meet with an ad rep and they say, oh, this is a great program. I need to put all my money into this. But in actuality, you never know what variables are going to come into play. So we suggest that if they're going to work with a daily publication or a daily radio program, that sort of thing, they do it once a week for 6 weeks to develop a good test. If it's weekly, once a week for 6 weeks, monthly for 4 months. And then they get a good sense of what's working and not working. And we really categorize the marketing channels into two different categories. And these are not technical terms by any means. But we call the flyby channels the ones where the attention of the prospect is captured when they're not necessarily looking for it. So that's typically a billboard or a radio ad or a mailer. The go-to channels would be websites and yellow page directories and booths at events where people are actually looking for something in particular, and your strategies are different for both of those categories.
That's really interesting. I want to get back to you here in a little bit as well, but I want to engage Mike in the conversation. First of all, what do you do for fun? We want to find out a little bit more about you and how people can reach you. What do you do for fun when you're not working?
Well, if they want to reach me on the weekend, I'm typically on the river paddling, or I'm out on my mountain bike.
Awesome.
So I just love the mountains and the outdoors.
You've got to be happy about the weather getting nicer.
Oh, yeah.
It's about to explode for weekend activities for you, I'm sure.
Oh, yes.
And do you have a website or an email address where people can contact you?
Sure. Our website is naturalmarketingservices.com. And my email address is bern@naturalmarketingservices.com.
Wonderful. Thank you. And we'll get back to you here in a moment. Mike, welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
Good morning.
Good morning. You know, Mike and I have bonded on food. I know you probably find that hard to believe, but we bonded over a fine dish at Wildfire. Was it Wildfire?
It was.
Yeah.
It was.
And your favorite place.
Well, one of my favorite places, that's for sure. I'm expanding my horizons, though, and trying other places. Welcome, Mike, founder and chief experience officer of Story Miners. I love that. Experience officer. Can you please explain a little bit more about your business and your title?
Well, let's start with the title. Chief Executive Officer typically means that the leader of the company is very interested in the business. It's, in my opinion, it's really important for the leadership of the company to pay attention to the customers. So if you state that you're about the experience that you offer your customers, the value proposition is there and the focus is there.
Interesting. And how did you get involved? I mean, you've got a wide variety of companies you've worked for and a lot of background. Tell us a little bit about your background first.
Sure. In high school, that's a long time ago, I was an exchange student overseas, studied in Brazil and also the former Soviet Union, and those were very formative events for me. In graduate school, international management and services marketing, and a quick trip right into the consulting world was the background. Just before Story Miners, I was working as e-visionary for IBM in global services. And my job as e-visionary was to take a look at all the cool intellectual property that IBM had and package it up for chief marketing officers, create a practice, sell the first engagement, grow the practice. The third one of those I did was around this notion of building a better customer experience to help service brands differentiate in the market. So we did that with Best Buy and McDonald's and some other name brands, cruise lines, National Thoroughbred Racing Association, and I found it to be just fascinating to be able to mix the rational side of business with the emotional side of an experience.
And the internet probably really helped that as well.
It sure helped things move along because now customers care more because they can. They don't have to put up with bad choices and bad service. They can move in a heartbeat. So as companies especially service brands, are feeling the pinch of commoditization, as business gets tougher for them, some of them are finding they need to compete on the customer experience. And those are the kind of companies we like to work with.
I've had some interesting customer experiences lately with a home remodel. I spent 30 minutes at Home Depot last night, and nobody ever asked to help if they could help me. And I needed help. I didn't know what I was looking at. Tell me a little bit. You talk about the customer experience. How do you go about that with a client?
Well, one of the first things that we do with a brand, not just with the person who's the client, is show them how the customer sees them. So often, mm-hmm. we have all these silos and departments that are good at seeing customers their way or through our rose-colored glasses, if you will. Yeah. And Home Depot in particular believes that they're doing a pretty good job.
And many times they do. I probably shouldn't have even thrown their name out there. But it's different. You know, if I'm shopping for something at Home Depot, I need help. If I'm shopping for shoes, I like to browse. You don't need to ask me if I need help. So, you know, how do you differentiate that in retail or different industries?
Well, the question that you posed really boils down to how adept and how astute are the people on the store floor. Mm-hmm. First of all, they have to be there. So management has to allocate enough funds for people to be able to be on the floor and not be stocking the shelves or not working in the back. So they've got to be present. The second thing is they have to know their area. They have to know the merchandise. And the most important thing in retail is to know how to read the customer. How many times do people come up to you and go, "Hey, can I help you out?" Why even bother? Take a look for a second. Find out if the person's browsing, if they're picking things up. If it's a grandmother picking up an iPod, it's probably a gift. Mm-hmm. So you can approach a little differently than you would assuming that it's for them. Reading the customer is the most important thing. And we teach people different techniques and tricks that they can do. Not tricks to people, but tricks to help people, to eliminate the barriers, to make the conversations flow a lot more easily.
Do you work mostly with establishments that have an offline presence or online or both?
You know, nobody doesn't have an online presence anymore.
But it has to be congruent, right? Is that what you try to
Absolutely.
Do?
Absolutely. We work primarily on the real-world experience, if you will, and there are others in the user experience design field, UX as it's called, uh-huh. that focus primarily online. You know, what color should the button be? Where does it need to go? Those types of things.
But when you're working with a customer that has primarily an offline, like, say, a Starbucks, where the experience is mostly you go into the Starbucks, how do you approach that customer? Like you say, you try to understand their customer base, but people go into Starbucks for different reasons. I mean, a certain portion are going in there to do business. A certain portion just want their coffee and leave. What method do you use to go in there to really understand their different customers?
Well, we do a few things. We have a process that we call story mining, which is about getting at the heart of the story of the brand. So taking Starbucks, for example, and we've all been there many times, you take a look at the existing research that they've already done. You look for how much of that research has a customer orientation and how much has a company orientation.
Mm-hmm.
Fill the gaps where necessary. We use observation techniques. We use live actors.
Like mystery shopper kind of people that go in and just observe what's going on?
Mystery shopping is usually used for compliance purposes. You know, is the salt to the left of the pepper?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Or the comment card stacked vertically?
Uh-huh.
If you have a
title.
You're
trying to get more, a deeper emotional
exactly.
takeaway?
Exactly. We'll look at not just what is, but what can be mm-hmm. or what shouldn't be.
Right.
So, for example, at Starbucks. If I were redoing Starbucks or Starbucks 2.0, I'd focus a lot more on how do you make Starbucks mine?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd make it so that you could configure the furniture more easily so that I can work or have a social thing or a small meeting, maybe some rolling blackboards, those types of things. I'd make it so I could turn down the sound in my area mm-hmm. or change the sound to be something totally different.
That's mm-hmm. interesting. I would like that.
I know.
Really would like that.
Get those espresso machines a little quieter.
Yeah, and sometimes the music is a little loud. That's really interesting. One thing that intrigued me about your background as well is that you were the founder of one of the first interactive agencies in the country. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. The name of the company was Galileo. There were several in the Atlanta area at the time, and my partner Jackie Goldstein and I founded a firm that helped corporations like AT&T and Bell South and Turner, the Goodwill Games, and on tell their stories electronically. So we we developed a number of firsts, the first kiosks, the first CD-ROMs, the first talking business cards, the first website for Holiday Inn that took reservations. It was a heady time. It really did feel like the Wild West.
What year was this?
We started in 1992 and sold the firm in 99.
Boy, you were on cutting edge in 92.
We were bleeding edge.
Really? I think back to 1992. We've come a long way.
Was that too far ahead at that time?
We were early for the market, but we were able to experiment with a whole bunch of ideas that made it a lot of fun. It was a profitable business every single year, which was nice. We sold it. We didn't make $1 billion, but we did okay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And are you still, like with your story miners, are you still trying to be that bleeding edge?
You know, I decided after being early that this time I would be on time.
That's a good
response. So are customers embracing what you're saying, or is it difficult to kind of educate them on the importance of this?
You know, other parts of the country and other parts of the world are a little bit ahead of us in the Southeast. London, Singapore, Japan, they're all very, very rapid adopters of this notion of put the customer at the focus of your business design so that all that you do resonates with them.
So it starts from the customer and works back to the corporation?
Exactly, exactly. You're in business to serve your customers. You know, what's the company that makes money?
The Federal Reserve?
Exactly, the Mint, the only company that can make, the only institution that can make money. We all say, I'm going to go into business to make money. What you really do is you go into business to provide a valued service.
Right.
In exchange for that, you get cash. So if your business focus is not on providing that excellent service, where do you expect the cash to come from? So the more you focus on that, the better off your business and your customers can be. In service businesses, particularly in the B2B space, everyone's buying your service as a part of their own value creation machine. They're buying you, they're buying Bernadette services so they can make more money. So the easier you make it for people, the more work you take out of working with you, the better off everybody is.
Right.
It really is. It's a great way to approach business in general, is how many people can you help today? I think when you really do believe that about your product, your service, it adds a whole new light. You know, then the money is secondary.
Yeah. We have a belief at StoryMiners in a principle called abundance. So many business people that we talk with, clients in particular, believe that there's not enough to go around. If I do this, I can't do that.
Right.
We believe that there's plenty to go around as a starting point. So when we find a better way to serve customers, we also make it so that it's less expensive for the company to deliver and easier for the people to adapt to. So it's a win-win-win, and that's where you start to get big shifts in the company perception
right.
and the stories that their friends tell about them.
I think the Internet's really helping with that because the Internet, I find working with people on the Internet, it's more collaborative and it's less competitive. Everybody feels like, oh, I can carve out my little niche and I'll be okay. Whereas, you know, maybe 20, 30, 50 years ago, it was like a zero-sum game where my gain was your loss.
Right. It's not necessarily that way. I agree. And there's so much business to go around. I'm curious to see, you travel a lot. You're fluent in four languages, which is so impressive. I need to find out how to say, do not smoke in my house, and all those languages with all my construction going on.
Maybe Mike can put a card, laminated card for you. You can just point.
I'm hanging it up. And now it's do not smoke in my garage or anywhere. You know how I feel about that. Not to change the subject, but I would love to know from an international perspective, how do you see business in the United States as opposed to some of the other countries you spoke of?
Can you give me a little tighter question on that?
Are you are you getting more business internationally or
right.
We're getting more speaking engagements overseas than we are nationally.
Interesting. No, yeah. But if a company is headquartered here or in another country, how do you find their interwoven communication, their process, the customer experience in some of the other locations out of the country?
It's much less sophisticated than it is here because we have so many more tools to work with and they're so highly adaptive. I'm doing a presentation in April on how CRM systems, customer relationship management tools and software can be used to the customer's advantage as well as the business's advantage.
Interesting.
We've got a much richer platform or foundation of tools to work with than other countries do, particularly in the marketing area. We know more about people and what they do. We pay more attention to that. So we can turn that to our advantage. However, in some other countries, there's a more natural proclivity to provide better service. When you go to Brazil, I lived in Brazil for a while. The first thing that happens when you walk into the store is somebody walks all the way over to greet you. They talk to you. They get to know you a little bit. In the meantime, they're sizing up your body type and size. They're looking at your clothes. They're asking you pertinent questions that are personal, not just what do you want to buy today, but what interests you in fashion or what are you reading? So they're collecting good information, and even the lowliest shop clerks know to do that naturally. We don't do that here.
Is that because there's so many big chains and it's got kind of impersonal, where maybe at one time in the history of that company they had that kind of service, but when they're trying to scale it, you know, to a gap on every corner, it's hard to kind of have that filter down to the employee?
Bingo. And I think that the lack of presence of them in the retail example that you gave, R.H. Macy was famous for walking the floors and stopping a woman and saying, why did you buy that color sock? Or why did you buy those chocolates instead of the box over here? And really coming to understand what their motivations were. And when the other employees would see Mr. Macy walking around, they would know it's okay to engage with the customer. There's a kind of a fear, even in friendly Atlanta, for actually talking to somebody other than the plastic hello.
That's interesting. Do you find that it's different between the sexes, between men and women? Because I can walk away from a dinner party and I know someone's life story and what motivates them. And my husband will get in the car and say, yeah, he's a Chiefs fan. You know, is there a difference between men and women as far as the customer experience in general?
I think there definitely is. And I think that men have so much to learn from women.
Did you hear that, Bernadette?
Yeah, I like that.
I like that, too. So what do you do for fun, Mike?
I love playing racquetball. I used to be really good, and now I'm okay.
Age will do that.
And I like woodworking a lot, too. Also hiking and movies with family. We like to travel as well.
Very neat. Great. And what's the best way for people to contact you?
Take a look at our website, www.storyminers.com, StoryMiners, and you can send me an email to mike@storyminers.com.
Wonderful. Both of you, I'm curious to know, you both seem to focus a little bit on the small business end of marketing. Can you let us know again, any common threads you see with companies? What are some of their struggles? How do you overcome that?
Like, if you could tell us one thing that they could do better and some way to do that better, what would you recommend?
The first thing I'd recommend, and Bernadette, I bet you'll agree on this, is garbage in, garbage out. Mm-hmm. If you have a clear understanding of what you're in business to do, or at least a notion of what game you're playing, are we on a soccer field or a baseball field, it makes it so much easier. So get your story clear from the outset and design the way that your business works around that to be what you want it to be. Mm-hmm. So make the right promises for the right reasons and keep them.
Mm. That's good.
Any thoughts on that, Bernadette?
Yes, I totally wholeheartedly agree with that. And I think that from a direct marketing perspective as well, they need to carve out time to spend time on the marketing, on the business, and not just reacting to the needs at the time. So many folks will call us when they're in a panic state and their revenues are low. And then we don't have enough time to really put something together that's going to be effective. So taking the time out on a monthly, weekly basis to work on the business.
And evaluate it, it sounds like, and look ahead and plan. Interesting.
I'd like to add one other thought. In the marketing world, so many people tend to be, as Bernadette said, very reactionary. Mm-hmm. Every time you do something in a small business, you're creating a new capability, or at least you have the opportunity to do that. So if you plan for the reuse of the activity that you're doing, I'm doing a campaign. Well, let's not just do the campaign. Let's do, how do we do a campaign? So that the next time you have a campaign, it's easier to do.
Right. Sure. So you have less learning curves.
Right.
You know, just that way you learn one time and then you can kind of
feed off of it.
Yeah, but you can also delegate it, which is where the growth and the speed come from. So if you're the one that has to do it all the time, the funnel stays nice and tight at the hard part.
Bernadette, where do you see your business 5 years from now?
I think we're going to continue to grow on a very deliberate basis. We see ourselves having about 10 employees right now. We have 3 full-time employees and a few contractors. And in that arena, probably still working with 1 to 150 employees because we're appalled at the staggering statistics about new businesses that start up. 96% fail within 10 years.
Wow.
And we want to take the 4% that are actually making that and grow that to 10, 20% if we can, by empowering them so that they can make smart marketing decisions instead of, you know, throwing their money away or just working in the business and not on it.
Interesting. What about you, Mike?
I have no clue.
Really?
It's just so hard to predict the future like that. I think, 10 years ago, it was the norm to think that you knew what was going on and you'd do all kinds of fancy financial planning, extending the past into the future. But I don't think the rearview mirror is a great way to drive forward these days.
That's interesting. And I like that perspective as well. But, I mean, with technology, I guess the reason I always ask that question is some people really see technology in their businesses as enhancing it, and others kind of take it back to where we first began and in on more of a personal level. And it sounds like both of you have more of a combination of the two.
Well, I'll answer your question directly, particularly with relation to the technology. I think that we're going to continue with the zero-sum gain for technology for some time, especially as it's is infiltrating the marketing and measurement areas so much. Mm-hmm. More spending is going on marketing automation and measurement right now than any other IT area. But I think that marketers are moving back toward authenticity. Mm. The customers want real relationships, real dialogue, real connections, real contact. And they understand that that's on an emotional, not just a rational basis. It's not what percentage of my wallet do you own? It's what percentage of my heart am I willing to give you?
Wow, that's powerful.
You got to earn that
every day.
That's not something you earn once.
And that's where focus on the experience, that chief experience officer, comes into play. I wish every company had one of those.
Excellent.
Or just hired you.
Mm-hmm.
Not a bad idea.
Not a bad idea. Mike and Bernadette, thank you so much for being our guests today on the Atlanta Business Radio Show. We hope you have a wonderful day. Any final comments, Lee?
No, it was a great show for me. Thank
Excellent.
You.
Have a great day.